Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep-fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 751, Mission Probable.
Mission definitely going to happen at this point.
We've established that these missions are, at the very least, probable.
Yes. Yeah, they're not totally impossible.
No. Yes.
A normal human being, probably not.
Yes.
But for Ethan Hunt.
But they keep knocking him out.
Or John Locke.
Well, at this point, if you're doing it long enough, and we've seen all the threats that people like, you got to come up. What's going to stop these people?
Nothing. We'll get into it, but it is the catalyst, the thing that is the center of this movie, is kind of interesting. Given
it's very timely,
and that's not, they didn't do it on purpose, right? Because this movie was supposed to come out 2 years ago.
It was at least filming 2 years ago,
yeah,
for
so
sure.
It's like,
so they had
it wasn't as
well. We'll get into that, but I've heard that Chris McQuarrie kind of makes it up as he goes.
Oh, is that
surprisingly
right?
enough for a $200 million movie? Yeah.
Okay.
So let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us today via the magic of ZoomTube is Pete from Middle Class Film Class. Hey, Pete.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Doing well.
Thanks for hanging out.
Just feeling a little bit nervous that he sounds better than we do.
I don't know how to handle that. He did chime in. I was like, God dang.
Yeah.
All right.
I can take the quality down if you want to go get my snowball.
Hey. Snowball. Taking the quality down is our job.
Yeah. Don't worry. We'll do that for you.
You know your
place. And for the record, I think they might actually lose this time. When I went into the movie, I was like, you know what? I think the world's going to end.
It is. That would be one hell of a way to end this series.
Wouldn't it?
It's like, man, we lost.
James Bond did it.
That's true.
Reboot.
That's true. Well, he lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The world didn't lose.
The world didn't lose, but he definitely did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So before we dig in, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, iHeart, TuneIn. Wherever you find a podcast, you can find us while you're there. Be sure and follow us. You never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's super helpful. Good for our egos most of the time. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. It's called the League of Show Shares. We're hoping you will share an episode. People who were kind enough to share an episode last week, there are a lot of them.
Oh.
Librarian Cynthia, Glenn Cougar, Melon Brewer, Lane Levanway, Gus Butisi,
hey,
sharing an episode that his son's actually on this time.
Very rare when that happens.
Yeah. He probably listened and was like, oh, crap.
I hit share before I listened. Son of a bitch. And Brendan McGuckin, Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Tom Dowdy, Chris Falls, Chris Magic Man, Gabriel Lugo, Ralph Tribble, Travis Tewitt, Julianne Jordan, Dissect That Film, Taylor Ward, Josh Rosen, Heather Sachs, Brent Smith, Christopher Rex, Binge Movies, Invasion of the Remake, Geek to Me Radio, Spoiler Piece Theater, Colby Mack, Ronnie Castle, Feel and Film, The Film B, Nostalgicast, Ryan Terry, Horos Reviews, Mike, which I think is also a new one, Mike and Oscar, Matt Naglia, and In Session Film. So thank you very much.
Did I hear Brad Hine in there?
No, you just got Brad Hine on the
brain. No, well, I was going to be nice to Brad because he...
Don't do that.
But he didn't show the show, so... Nah.
Yeah, like, don't...
Screw Brad.
Yeah,
never
thanks.
Be nice to Brad Hine.
I will, it's the Hine effect.
All right, fine. So, yeah. I will say... Brad was at a some small convention
right
in town.
Yeah,
he shot me a message and said, "This guy has a Monster Squad poster, theater used, untheater used, and still rolled for $25." I go, "Are you still there?"
Yeah,
and he was like, "Yes." I'm like, "I will Venmo you $25 wow. right now," and it showed up at my door yesterday. So thank you, Brad.
Personal delivery?
Well, yeah, we don't live that far away. You know,
like, you know what I would have done if I was him? I would have bought that and then I would have FaceTimed you and set it on fire. I would have just set it on fire.
I would have banned Brad from the show.
Look at this Monster Squad Jim Mint poster that I found. And first, I'm going to wipe my ass with it, and then I'm going to set it on fire.
That would be torture.
And then it's
going
to be Calvin peeing on the ashes.
Yeah, right, yes. Right, right.
And it would be the best usage of film related to Monster Squad ever.
Wow, some strong opinions about Monster Squad in the show.
Well, yeah. From some people, they're wrong, but it's fine. But no, so thank you, Brad, for grabbing that poster. It is ready to be... put in a frame and hung up next to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I think
you know what? I think Quentin Tarantino would approve.
I think he would too.
I think he would. I think he'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
That
no,
makes
I,
total
that
sense.
That was the other thing. Friend of the show and movie boyfriend, Brian Spath. when the Tivoli was going out of business,
yeah.
When they were closing, they had in the back, like behind the theater, they had
to get rid of all the posters that Jesus wouldn't like.
Yes, right. They just had bins of posters and they were in alphabetical order. And I was like, do they have the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood poster? He goes, I have both of them for you.
Wow.
And so it's the one with Leo and Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Margot Robbie.
Nice.
Like, those are the two that
That's really
got.
Cool.
And I was like, yes! And now Monster Squad's going to go right next
there
to
you
him.
Go.
They probably could have, like, afforded to keep that theater open by selling those
for
posters.
Sure. Well, I think I just saw that they're going to start showing movies again.
On Friday nights.
Is that what it is?
It's to lure you in to learn about... the
Jesus.
Lard. Yeah, so it's and I'm sure it'll all be G-rated.
What's
it's going to be?
I was thinking it was going to be that Jim Caviezel.
Yeah, it'll be Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom.
And
yeah.
How Obama stole the election. I don't know.
I don't
something
think,
about that.
I don't think that's...
Give it that, time.
That's fair.
Give it time.
They had zero down on that one
yet. Documentary.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So,
did you mention YouTube?
No, I'm still in the middle of shame. I was like, calm down.
I'll tell you, our YouTube views were down. I need everyone to log into YouTube and watch whatever Insidious 5. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I don't know. Maybe that crowd isn't watching YouTube reviews, but we got to get those numbers up.
Nobody watched Insidious 5.
That was the number one.
It made
movie,
like,
right?
Oh, did it really?
It made like $35 million dollars or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, all
it's right. Blumhouse, man.
That's you true. Know? Yeah, foot rubbing a bomb pop.
Yeah, and a picture with...
Zaslav.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a YouTube channel. Kevin says you have to go watch it or we won't do these anymore. And yeah. then
or else we have to fire Joe. So okay. Save Joe.
No, wait a minute.
Hashtag save Joe.
Yeah. Does that mean I don't have to get up this early? All right.
And no, they're going to save you. Don't worry.
And then finally, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get bonus content and we like you more. And you help out when one of these microphones stops working.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
and we have to buy fancy Pete microphones.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in.
God damn. Like, you know, when Paul Harris was on for the Indiana Jones episode, he had said that he had a hard time getting into Indiana Jones because he had seen Dead Reckoning first.
And especially since they use the same track.
It is very similar.
It's the same.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Which track is that?
The train track.
Oh,
apparently it's the same exact train
track. Oh, it's
track.
Orient Express.
Oh.
Both.
Yeah.
There's
probably a finite number of places you can film a giant train
at
scene
this point,
like that.
Right.
Yeah. And they're already like, it makes me think, like, were they like, yeah, we can pencil you in. We got Mission Impossible film. And like, seriously, like, if they're set up for movie filming, is there a stretch? Like, I would love to dig into the logistics, but it's just odd. And it's also odd how many other movies have done the same thing recently as this movie.
The train sequence, you mean?
Not just the train, Rome. Fast X filmed in the exact same place.
I thought this, you know, it's crazy that
going down
that.
The stairs in a little car. Like, I just, there's so many similarities like that where you're like, I know this movie was filming several years ago, but how did they get the same train track in the same Rome, the literally the same place? Like, so it makes me think there's like some kind of incentive to where they're like, hey, come film here. And
yeah, it's called a vacation.
But how do they, of all the places, you could film a thing. I know there's a finite number of like major set pieces, but still, they're like, this is Mission Impossible. They fly everywhere. They go to Abu Dhabi.
Well, it makes me wonder, because of the gap, did the other films be like, oh, I heard that was good to film there. Let's go back.
I heard Macquarie and Cruise are filming in.
Yeah, we'll beat them. Our review will come out first because they're.
I was kind of thinking, did Mission Impossible start doing that a few years ago? And then they're like, hey, this is available. And then how much would that suck? Like when Fast X comes out. And there's those action sequences.
Man.
I'm just wondering how much they're like, because they know they're coming out later. Like,
you know, Tom Cruise is sitting in his.
He has to be pissed. Like,
Xenu building or whatever. Just like.
On the, it's a regeneration pod he has in his.
On the upside, Fast X is so forgettable.
That's also true.
Like, nobody's going to remember
it. I'll tell you that, not to jump ahead to the ending and stuff, though. This movie felt like the end of a movie.
Yeah.
The closure of the Fast X in this movie, and for all their similarities, they're both part ones. This movie, at the end, I go, hell yeah, I just watched a movie.
Fast X,
they're like, and
you could watch this and be like, okay, we're done with this movie.
It felt like a complete
Well, supposedly, like they were kicking around ending on a cliffhanger, and Cruise was like, no, we're not doing that.
He knows.
He's like, it needs to be a complete experience. Yeah. He's like, it's obviously an open-ended ending.
Yeah, for sure.
But
there's closure on this part.
Right. Like, there's still, like, the mission itself has not been completed, but, like, they've reached a logical stopping point in the story. I didn't walk out. Like, ending of Fast X would have been upsetting had I given
cared about
that movie.
The ending of Fast...
I was just glad it was over. Yeah. I didn't care how it ended. Just
we're done now?
It was like my first marriage. I don't care how it ends, just as long as it ends. What do I got to do to get
That's
to the
end? That's a
hallmark
of a good blockbuster movie.
Yes.
Comparing it to your ex-wedding.
Yes.
I always think of Lord of the Rings as like the perfect way to close, because, I mean, obviously that's one big story, but each film, even though it's a third of one book, feels like you've just completed one experience, one journey.
I think Infinity War is the same. The end of Infinity War, you're just like, that's the end of that movie.
Yeah, no,
we still haven't achieved our overarching goal.
Right.
But we have come to a stopping point.
You got your tickets worth. The worst thing about leaving a movie feeling like, you know, like there's just kind of that bummer feeling. And I know it, you know, these movies aren't the first to do it. Obviously, like Star Wars left you on a cliffhanger. I mean, they've been doing
Star Wars didn't, but Empire did.
Right. I meant in the series. Yes,
look, we're nerds.
Okay. Sorry, I know.
You gotta.
Yes.
Everyone listening was saying the same thing.
Sorry, Heather. I know. All right. So they've been doing it for a while, but they're ones that do it really well. And I think Fast was bad.
Mm-hmm.
This one does it well. Spider-Verse is hard because, I mean, it was a great movie and I loved it, but man, I'll tell you, if I could capture the recordings of the audience that 90% didn't know it was going to end like that,
I feel like
there's a disappointment. I don't know if it's because you just love it and want more so much, but man, the whole theater went, what?
It was one of the better cliffhangers when it comes to a two-part movie.
I totally agree with you.
So I think here's the difference. Fast X, first off, bad.
Yeah.
But second... It ended like mid-sentence, right?
It ended with a car hanger coming down.
That's just the guy writing it stopped typing.
You know,
where Spider-Verse, it ends on a cliffhanger, but that cliffhanger is a reveal.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There's no reveal to
a whole new character.
That's the edge of a dam, and are we going to make it? Are we not going to make it? Like that was great. When they did it when I was a kid at the cereals.
Right.
You know, but
to get you to come back.
Right. Because then part two was next week.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, that's not what this is doing. Where Spider-Verse like has this great reveal. It introduces the whole it completely shifts what you've been seeing, and it ends and you walk out like thinking about it. Where with Fast X, if you were into that movie on any level, you just walk out with blue balls.
Well, and the other thing. The other thing. to be fair, like with Spider-Verse, I said it before, I'll say it again. I mean, they did the bait and switch with the title. This movie has part one in the title.
Yeah.
Spider-Verse did, and they changed it. And I think they did that on purpose. And I do, as much as I love the movie, I think it's a little misleading because it was there part one and they changed it to Across the Spider-Verse and Beyond the Spider-Verse. So people didn't know. We're nerds. We're living this world. Like, I think most of the audience, I mean, because their reaction, they go, what? Like,
this didn't need a part one.
No.
In the title.
This is the thing. Why was this not just, I guess, because they haven't, I guess in the movies at the end, they get the threat. They get the thing.
Yeah.
It's a part one because they didn't get the thing. But you're right. I mean, this finished, I'm like, they could have called it a different title. Like,
well, just call it Dead Reckoning and then moved on to...
Like Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, Mission Impossible submarine movie.
They're part one and two, Endgame and Infinity War, but they don't have a part one.
Sure, Mission Impossible 7, Ocean Gate. Actually, it's number 8, so it could be Ocean Gate G8.
No, this is 7.
But the next one
they got to go to the submarine. I did see that James Cameron had tweeted. I think that was James Cameron.
It was, yeah.
And he was just like, I'm not doing an Ocean Gate movie. Like, it's not
happening. He's like, I don't have time for this. You know I don't have time for this. But I'm going to respond to these, your stupid ass rumors.
Right.
You just know that anytime James Cameron has to stop exploring the ocean, creating new technology, you know how pissed that guy is, right?
He's like, I think he should make an Ocean Gate movie, and it should be like 10 minutes long.
Just like a little short.
They just go
a
down.
A little short before
boom,
Avatar.
Credits.
No, like it's 8 minutes of warnings of them going into an unsafe vessel.
Honestly,
and then
like,
it implodes.
I don't know how you would get a movie out of Ocean Gate.
You don't.
Like,
I mean, James Cameron could at this point. I think he's kind of made his bones. Where
but he
like,
wouldn't want to.
No.
That's the thing.
No.
That's the thing. James Cameron's way too busy. I mean, think about it.
James Cameron is too classy
yeah.
to make money about people dying at sea.
Yes.
Oh,
he would never do that.
That is not what he's going to do.
No. And make it an action movie.
Well, it has to be
Titanic.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the joke.
A lot of people died at sea at that movie.
But it has to be worth his time, right? Six people?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't.
A boat full?
No,
done.
It's like, yeah, well, a big boat.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, six billionaires.
Ship, yeah.
6 billionaires is like 40,000 real people.
That's true.
That's a fair point.
The conversion rate, I forgot.
That is true.
Yeah.
But okay, so this guy, Tom Cruise, I got to say for a second, no matter what your personal feelings are about him.
I don't disagree.
No one, and I mean no one, is preparing for films like this guy.
So this is what I will say.
My only complaint is I wish he had started with this mentality younger.
Which is what Jackie Chan did.
Yeah,
that is the closest comparison to somebody
going
being,
up on buildings and sliding.
Just being prepared for a role is Jackie Chan. If you've never, seen Police Story or Rumble in the Bronx or all of that stuff pre like Rush Hour.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. The Rush Hour is fantastic.
Non-American films.
The non-American films.
The Hong Kong
the stuff,
films.
And all of that stuff. He is doing what. Yeah. Tom Cruise is doing now.
I mean, he almost fell off a building. He catches himself before he falls to his death with no wires. Like, if you see the behind the scenes
stuff. Which one?
Whichever one
all
he slides. Yeah, the movie.
Everyone.
That one where he's sliding down the building
you
sideways.
Know Jackie Chan?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
He catches himself. Yes. And he has no wires.
Well, and Tom Cruise does the same. He, remember when he, in, was it the last one?
Where he's jumping building to building.
And he breaks his ankle and then gets up and starts running again.
He broke his.
Like, it's.
But so.
He's just like, we're not ruining this shot. There's a scene in this movie that I have not heard anybody talk about.
Okay.
So we're jumping ahead because it's what we do. Deal with it. Like, if you don't like it, go listen to something else. So where they're getting ready to go do the train thing, right? And he's like, well, here's how we're going to do the train thing, right? And they start as he's explaining it.
Yeah.
They're showing you the thing and then they pull back and they're like, that's not what we're going to do at all.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a moment in there where he's like, oh, I'm going to get off the train this way. And he's like, I've got the parachute backpack. And you see him on the train, pull the thing. And it's this giant elaborate stunt that I thought they were like flash forwarding in time. And he never does it. Like
for a
2 second cutaway, they had to have spent probably $3 million to get that 2 second cutaway.
Well, let me tell you.
And him do a
legit
endangering
stunt
for a 2 second cutaway.
No, let me tell you, Tom. So did you see my tweet from earlier?
I don't follow you on Twitter.
Well, that's true. Good. I don't want those followers. How many times do you think, so we know Tom Cruise does his stunts, and that's what I'm leading up to, is it's incredible the dedication he has. How many times do you think he did skydiving to prepare for this action sequence?
13,000.
Well, that's a lot.
I don't know.
500 skydives.
I saw something that said like he did the motorcycle thing.
Oh,
like
1,300 meters. Yeah, 13,000 meters.
Yeah. No, 13,000 times. Jumps.
Oh, that's what he did. Oh, okay. Okay.
500 jumps for skydiving.
Yeah.
So they had, and they filmed it, and they tracked it. They put GPS on him. They tracked the wind. They tracked how the distance he went. They tracked everything to give him the perfect jump, the perfect landing, make sure the bike was far enough away from him. 500 jumps.
That's crazy.
That is a lot of jumps.
Insane. Yeah. It's weird that, like, that's enough jumping out of airplane that, like, you're bored by it.
Just, right? You should watch the footage. He lands, and he's like, he goes, "Hey, McHugh." And then he's like, high five. No, see, if you watch the behind the scenes, it is insane how confident movie actor Tom Cruise is skydiving and parachuting. He has such control, and he lands, he walks, and he's like, "Hey, that's a good jump." Like, it is. It's second nature.
Yeah.
He's turning into Richard Branson, where he's an actor second, you know?
Yeah.
Richard Branson is a billionaire second.
Yeah. So he learned motocross. Like, that's...
But he's been riding... I feel like, I mean, if I'm right... I don't think that I am, though. He's been riding motorcycles in these movies since
forever.
The first one.
Wait, he knows motorcycles. He learned
in every movie.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, in every movie.
But he learned motocross.
Yeah.
Oh,
motocross,
I see what you're saying.
Is very different.
Yes.
Okay, motorcycles and turning all that, you know, complicated high speeds. He's done it. Motocross, he's jumping 80, 100-foot mounds. They said he went 80 feet in the air. Movie actor, 61-year-old movie actor Tom Cruise.
That's the bigger part of it. The 61-year-old is more impressive.
13,
that's amazing.
Yeah. 13,000 motocross jumps, 80 feet in the air. Movie actor. I mean, this guy is learning professions that people study their entire life to give us two stunts in a movie. Like, it's just the dedication. So, again, no matter what your personal feelings.
I don't. Look.
It is what it is, but just what's
gotta,
on film
you
here.
You got to ask yourself. Is he okay? No, he's not.
The answer's always been no to that.
But like now I'm like, I think he might be suicidal. Like, I think he's...
My feelings on him are...
You know, somewhere he has written down, if I do this stunt and I die doing it, put it in the movie.
Without absolutely. Question.
Well, I mean, it can't be for nothing. Like,
but
it just...
My feelings on him are the same.
It's called the Vic Morrow clause.
And you know, he films the stunts as their first day of shooting.
Yeah, I knew that.
So he knocks all those out.
But
I think it's like, well, why would you film a whole movie if something happens?
Because if he gets injured and he needs 6 weeks to recuperate. Yeah.
Which is kind of, didn't that happen?
He broke his ankle.
Yeah.
So you can't do it in the middle. It's like you got to do it and see how it goes. The big stunts, and then the rest of it's just your normal. I mean, I say just your normal. There's cars and running and all that, but not
the life threatening.
Yeah.
No, I totally believe everybody has the right to practice any sort of religion that they choose. I'm totally with that. He's a wackadoo. Like, that's the bottom line. And
technical
term. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Clinical diagnosis.
But. I do. It's just like Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, I have a different feeling of Daniel Day-Lewis.
That's so cool. Joe and I came to the conclusion. I just have to say, I have in my notes method acting Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis, great actor. I know how you feel about him. I love Daniel Day-Lewis. I think his methods are cool. I think his movies are incredible. But Daniel Day-Lewis goes, I'm going to learn how to sew.
Or to make a shoe or something.
Tom Cruise goes, I'm going to learn how to skydive, pilot a plane, do motocross.
Swallow fire.
How is this any different? I mean, this is method acting, essentially.
It's method stunt acting.
Method stunt acting.
But why? But we don't. Tom Cruise doesn't get the accolades.
Does he have an Oscar?
No.
He's been nominated, though, right?
Yeah, I think he was nominated for Rain Man and Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
You know what's really, really going to piss off people is when they start doing best Oscar for stunts and Tom Cruise wins the first one. That's going to piss everybody.
And
all the
they should have been doing it's kind of late to the game to start doing a best stunt Oscar.
Yeah,
they should have been doing that for
It's kind
decades.
Of like the Rick Baker makeup award where, like, you know, that was what, 82 when he wins that. And it's like, so you had all of this time to nominate somebody for makeup, and then finally you do it and Rick Baker wins. Now he's in the same class as the Suicide Squad.
Well, I mean, but it's tough, though, because, like, you got to start somewhere, and you can't retro... I mean,
no,
sometimes they do little, like, honorary awards, right?
I think there are,
like,
plenty
Mel Brooks
of...
is getting an Oscar this year.
Oh,
it's an honorary at the Governor's
I think there are
Bowl.
Plenty of stuntmen and stunt sent people and
not for best makeup, by the way. That was their two separate.
Yes, yes, right,
he's not
right,
a secret makeup artist in the.
But that are sitting at home, being like, ah, you know,
sure,
shattered my collarbone in this. Know. You know,
well, especially when they use stunt people less and less than they ever have.
Yeah.
And so like that's the other reason I feel like it's a little late to the game.
But I would agree with
that. But if it encourages studios to use them more, because I do think it makes for better movies.
It's, to Paul Harris's point, if you were to see Indiana Jones and this back to back,
especially if you saw this first, which is how the critics locally did.
Definitely skew your feelings on Indiana Jones, because this is like unbelievable. Yeah. Like this movie is on a completely different level. And I do compare it to Police Story and things like that by Jackie Chan, because you don't see this type of filmmaking anymore.
Right.
Like the risk taking or the set pieces. I think if James Gunn if we ever get back to the Justice League, he needs to get McQuarrie to do the Justice League. Like let him, the ensemble of this movie, along with like different story threads and things like that, I think McQuarrie would make a killer Justice League director, because he can handle all of this different stuff. Because this movie's so big.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how else to describe it as like, this is a big, massive movie.
And it feels big.
It feels
like in a good way.
Yeah.
The scope is big. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're thrown back in. I did not rewatch any of the other ones, but I forgot that they have kind of brought Tom Cruise back into the fold. I feel like he's been out on this.
Okay, every single movie he goes rogue.
I guess
rogue.
That's true.
But this movie, to its credit, I loved the meta commentary.
Yeah.
What's the name of this thing? Impossible Mission Force? Are you serious? This guy always goes rogue. Like, this movie was such a meta takedown of how ridiculous the entire
series.
Like,
I like
the fact that they finally referenced that IMF stands for International Monetary Fund, because I'm always like, none of these politicians are getting confused. Yeah. Like, that's a thing. So
right.
I liked hearing that. But I also liked that. I feel like this movie had humor in a way,
lot of humor
that the other ones haven't.
Yeah.
And a lot of physical humor. Like
the scene in the car is the one that really stands out.
The scene in the car and the train scene when he first parachutes onto the train and he beats up that guy by accident.
Yeah, yeah,
like, I'm like, this is like Inspector Clouseau stuff. Yeah, right?
I agree.
Like I was really surprised because like, he lands and then his parachute's still outside of the train and the wind grabs it and it slams him, but then he slams into the guy.
Right.
And then the guy gets up and it happens again.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he completely defeats this guy on accident. Which one was funny and two was kind of endearing, considering that it's Tom Cruise and you know how massive his ego is.
Yeah.
That he like let them construct the scene entirely around him accidentally winning.
Yeah. Right.
Not even that too. He's not even on the train for the majority of, I mean, 90, I'd say 85% of that entire train sequence.
Yeah.
It's her, which also elevates the stakes, because if you think Tom Cruise is the one involved, or Ethan Hunt is the one involved in this, it's going to go fine. There might be some snafu along the way, but he's going to pull it out. But you have this unknown, this pickpocket, this random
Haley Atwell's character.
Yeah,
it is interesting to put a fish out of water. So she basically.
Do you think she's a fish out of water?
Yeah, she's a con man.
I don't think she is.
She's a very less capable fish.
I think she's the girl from the beginning.
What beginning?
In Tom Cruise
would know, right?
Would think so, unless she has been undercover this entire time.
Oh,
that's the way these movies work, though, right? Like, I think Haley Atwell, who plays Grace, has been like the secret agent the whole time. Maybe. I don't think Rebecca. Spoilers. I don't think Rebecca Ferguson's dead either.
I don't think she is either. I think. And I said this in the movie. I was like, they did not kill her.
No.
They faked her death to trick
Gabriel.
The entity.
Yes.
The entity knows that she needs to die for the dominoes to be in place.
Correct.
So they faked her death so it would look, the entity would think that that right domino sequence was occurring.
That's exactly what I, because they say earlier that the entity knows everything about these people. So, and we should say the entity is basically
AI.
Is Skynet. Like, yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Like, it has become self-aware, and it is infiltrating and taking out all of the truth. It's infiltrating.
It's very advanced. It does its own taxes. It's crazy.
Yeah, right.
It's cooler than saying AI, though. But it is AI. It's what you think of as AI. When they say AI is out of control. But also...
When you say AI, I think of Nelly.
Haley Joel Osment.
Think of Nelly.
Oh.
It's AI.
Wow.
All right. But this is also kind of the plot of Westworld.
Okay, but it's also going to... It's also going to be the plot of that new... Gareth Evans. Which one? Who Edwards. Did Rogue One?
Edwards.
The new Gareth Edwards movie is where the John David Washington is trying to, like, AI has taken over.
Yeah.
I will say I found myself more engaged with this story than any of the previous Mission Impossibles I've watched.
Interesting.
You're not wrong. Like, it's like, this isn't a groundbreaking story by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, I felt for the first time like I knew the names of characters that weren't Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Less twisty and turny, but I don't think it was for a detriment. It was more self-contained.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing. It's just interesting that, but Westworld is a very recent show, which of course didn't get renewed, which brought up all sorts of feelings like, oh, well, that's just frustrating all over again to think about it. But
I'm okay with it not being renewed.
The whole thing is that Westworld is about AI and how they created it for this theme park. But really what they were doing was trying to create AI and profile people. And the AI could predict everything that people were going to do they hadn't done yet. And so it's like, that's exactly what the entity is. And so just having seen that show, just having watched Fast X, just having seen Indiana Jones, I'm like, this is a weird amalgam of all these things that are very recent.
Yeah. I mean, we've said that before, is like, sometimes that just happens where idea, you know, Volcano and
Dante's
Peak.
Yeah, the parallel.
I was just going to say, I have a theory about this intersecting, very similar overlapping plots.
Yeah.
We've had that for decades in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
The large plots, the Illusionist and the Prestige. Mm-hmm. I think the AI's been amongst us all.
Oh, it's AI. It's the entity.
It's just getting more sophisticated. It's not as obvious anymore when you have Deep Impact and The Day After Tomorrow. Yeah. Now it's just scenes within it themselves, you know, that are overlapping.
Yeah, that's really funny.
What if Tom Cruise is the entity?
You know what? Wouldn't surprise
me. And this is a biopic.
That's would not
Hubbard.
Surprise me.
L. Hubbard's entity.
So the movie starts out. I thought this was a very cheesy scene in the submarine. Did not like it. This
felt like Mission Impossible 1. It's so interesting.
It just felt like a different movie. It did not feel the caliber of what these movies are. It was
especially
the worst open.
I'm expecting a cold open with some crazy
really
stunts.
Cool.
Yeah.
Although from what I understand, there was a different original cold open where they had de-aged Tom Cruise and they didn't like it.
It was the flashback.
I think they must
to
have
the
used
original.
They've used it, I think. Where it's the flashback to...
They said they scrapped all the de-aging stuff for Cruise.
Oh, interesting.
Which is fine.
Yeah, and because the...
Yeah, because he looks the same.
McQuarrie was like, he's like, it just takes you out of it.
I hate the uncanny
thing. Are they going to give him those...
You know, here's the thing. I don't think it's the valley that's uncanny. I think it's us. Like, I think... like the Harrison Ford stuff I thought looked really good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I couldn't get my mind to stop going, this stuff looks really good.
Yeah.
Right? Because I know it's not real, and there's like you, even though I think objectively it looked really good, like you logically, you just can't stop trying to find the flaw because you know that what you're seeing isn't real. You can never truly get lost in the moment.
Do you think it's because that we know what these people look like when, like, Tom Cruise, we've seen Tom Cruise grow up, basically.
Yeah.
So we know what Will Smith is the same way.
Yeah.
We've seen them at that age.
Yeah.
So do you think, like, that plays into our head, too, where it's like...
I think it's just, I mean, I think that certainly doesn't help, but I think ultimately it's just we know what they're doing and we can't not know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And if they were doing it to someone we didn't know... There's not a need to do it.
I was going
to
say, it's pointless at that point.
Right, yeah. Like, you just cast a different, younger actor.
So
but
is
general audience caring about that? Is the GA out there looking at it and going, oh, this is it's good, but I'm still being fooled? I think most people want to switch their brain off and just go, ooh, young Harrison.
Yeah. No, I think it's such a different thing. Like, it's like we've, you know, and maybe if they keep doing it, like, our kids or their kids can get there in the same way that we know these are really stunts and, like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have to turn off our, we can turn off our brain and be like, I know Tom Cruise is really hooked up to a wire.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. But I just think that de-aging is, I think that's I think they've gotten it pretty damn close.
They're close. They're very close.
But I don't know that our brains can ever fully take that last step.
Maybe on this podcast right now, because most people who see forced perspective scenes don't think, ooh, that's a forced perspective thing, Steam.
Yeah.
But did you guys see Unwelcome, that movie that just came out last year?
No.
It's like a Scottish movie or Irish movie or something like that, and it's about these red caps or goblins that are part of, like, they're almost like leprechauns. And there's a ton of force perspective to keep a lot of practical effects. And the whole time I'm watching the movie, I'm like, how did they make this movie? This looks great. And my girlfriend's watching it, not thinking about it one second about, you know, the production value of it. But I'm thinking, this reminds me of The Gate, little creatures and a lot of force perspective.
Oh, is that the one where the couple, like, inherits, like, a cottage and they have to go feed? Then, yes, I did see that.
The red caps want her baby.
Yes.
Well, they've been doing that since Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Have you watched? I mean, have you? But that sounds very similar. I mean, that's a movie from 1959, and the way they did that was all forced perspective.
Right.
And it's incredible.
Huge chunks of Lord of the Rings. I don't think about it in that. For whatever reason, I lose it in that.
Oh, that carriage that Gandalf is 20 feet in front of. Right. It's so incredible.
They do it in Elf, at the beginning of Elf, when Will Ferrell's... Mm-hmm.
More noticeable there, but yes.
Yeah.
I think that's because, like... That's something that people have known about for generations. It's just a quirk of our minds that our minds are willing to accept, like, that optical illusion, where with de-aging, it's not an optical illusion in the same way.
Computers are different than the practical. We talked about
practical
all the
effects.
But this whole scene is setting up something that I will tell you, these movies do confuse me sometimes, especially the first movie I loved watching as a kid, the De Palma 96 film. But I didn't really know what
Brian De Palma
going
to that first one.
But it's great. Yeah. I went back. It holds up. I only watched the first one and then saw this one. Like, I just wanted to watch the first again. But this confused me because the opening scene, the entire point of it is to set up that something weird is going on with AI. It's like Russians and a submarine, and they shoot a missile at what they think is they're supposed to have this high tech that no one can find them. And somehow there's another ship and they're shooting a missile. And so they're trying to take out this ghost ship. And as soon as their missile gets to it, it disappears. And so they're like, well, this is weird, huh? It's some kind of a trick. But then their missile turns around and comes back and hits them. But meanwhile, they're cutting to this super high-tech device that's in the back of it that looks like this huge, kind of looks like the thing from Westworld that's hanging up, but it's this huge complex thing.
The ball or whatever.
Yeah. And in my mind, I'm going like, that's the thing. Like,
that's the singularity or whatever.
Yeah. That's the thing. But this whole movie plays it off like they don't know what this thing is. And at the end of the movie, like, dun, 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 it was in the sub.
I think, so what happened, the entity is hidden in, like, somehow the Americans.
It's the source code for the entity. The
Americans had gotten this thing into the sub, and it's, like, inside this thing. So that's the key, is like the Americans were like, we're just going to test this out and see if it works.
Yeah.
And they sneak this source code into this Russian sub. Well, it works a little too well, and that's how we end up where we are.
But the thing, the entity is in the sub. That big ball is...
So it's the source code of it. They have a one line, small line where they say, the only way we can stop this is we find the source code before it's evolved, before it's mutated into its more pervasive version that we have out in the real world. It's like, for some reason, that submarine is cut off, so the source code is unchanged, and they can find a way to deactivate it from there. So the entity sunk its source code to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, so the entity fired the missile and stuff in order to protect itself.
Correct.
And it's also showing how impressive the entity is, because they're like, this Russian nuclear sub cannot be detected by any army in the planet. We've purposely gone into the territory of every country with a military on the planet and been undetected. But the entity is able to manipulate their electronics very quickly and destroy the sub in a second, one scene.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows the danger of the entity, and also how smart it is to sink it to the bottom itself, to the bottom of the
ocean.
That's
the part I missed, was it did it to itself, because that's what I was confused about. And our team doesn't know what we've seen. I guess the way they show it, you know, movies have an unspoken language, right?
Yeah.
When a movie does I'm going to put in quote, dun, 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 like there's this language of cinema. And so at the end of the movie, when they reveal it, to me, it felt like they were revealing to the audience.
Right, but they were really revealing to the characters.
To them. And so our team didn't know it, but we're supposed to know. I'm like, that's the thing from the beginning.
Right.
I never thought for a second that wasn't the secret thing that sunk. So I was a little confused with what they were trying
to. Well, I was wondering, how is that the secret thing, right? I was like,
the sub, you mean?
I was like, that's probably the secret thing. But I was like, but I don't get how this connects and why they have the key and like I don't and how the key got to where they can find it. Like, I mean, I, you know, so like that was a moment. It was a reveal for me in that of like, here's how it all ties
in. Whole key thing is, though, that so Rebecca Ferguson has one half and then the Americans, knowing where the sub went down, waited until it thawed, right? Because they were in the polar ice caps, and that's where the Americans got the second half of the key.
Right.
Okay.
And that's how we ended up, you know, they were trying to get to Rebecca Ferguson.
How did Rebecca Ferguson get the first
half?
She,
like, picked it off someone. Like,
yeah,
she,
it doesn't really say clearly how she gets it.
Kittner, who is...
Kittredge,
yeah.
Which I just watched the first movie, and I'm like...
Okay, so, and that's this scene with Cary Elwes, where we find out he's the head of the CIA. All of these people, am I wrong that these were all, like, the people that gave Tom Cruise missions in the previous movies?
Well, Kittredge is in the first movie.
Right, but I'm like Rob, what's his name? Rob Delaney. Rob Delaney is the guy in, like, I feel like you don't bring Rob Delaney in for a...
That was a weird cast.
But I think Rob Delaney was, like, the mission head in another movie.
Rob Delaney was in this movie?
He's in the scene where you've got all of like the heads of the military or whatever. He's the guy in like the military suit. He's the guy in like
he's standing up in the back while everyone else is lounging.
I couldn't tell who that was. That's Rob Delaney.
Yeah.
Maybe with gray hair or something.
Yeah, and we had no beard.
Yeah, the great Ron Delaney from Home Sweet Home Alone.
Yeah, that's funny. I missed
Deadpool.
He looked familiar. I did that thing where I'm like, that's who is
that? But he had no beard.
Yeah,
which maybe, usually got like a mustache
the beard
or something.
Is why. Okay, gotcha. Okay, so anyway, so we see that's the thing, right? So the entity, we've just explained it. That's great. So that's what they set up in the beginning. And now we know Ethan Hunt's on the run, as he always is.
He always is. But he's not on the run because he goes to like, I did think there's some great head fakes where you think this guy walking into this military facility is a bad guy, right? Yeah. Like the way they shoot him, the way they're like, you know, the whole thing. And then we find out that it's Tom, you know,
he looks like a bad guy.
He does look like a bad guy. Like, you know, but I thought the same thing on the train sequence when we think that Haley Atwell is dead to rights and she's got that guy pointing a gun at her. I was waiting for that mask to come off and it'd be Rebecca Ferguson. Like,
oh,
I was,
yeah,
you know,
gotcha.
Ethan Hunt, like the mask pulling the whole time where they're constantly trying to Shea Whigham's trying to pull someone's mask off.
That is a hilarious comedic beat. He sees a guy and he's like fish hooks his mouth and he's like trying to, he's like, what are you doing? I think that's a really good,
I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed those.
The age of COVID, that was the most dangerous stunt in the movie. Get your fingers out of my mouth. You ain't my dentist. Yeah.
I really enjoyed those parts. Like, they were fun. I thought it was hilarious with that through line of the mask pull off, the computer hacking where Luther's like...
Lex Luthor's not in this movie.
Lex Luthor's not in this movie? Who am I thinking
of?
He's bald?
Ving Rhames.
Yeah.
So his name's Luther. You got it.
Yeah, okay, so he's like changing their face and all. It's funny stuff, but I felt like if you removed them from the movie, the plot doesn't change. I just felt like we kept taking – there's so many characters, and we kept detouring to this comedic relief of this buddy cop movie. And I'm just like, that really didn't push the plot along.
You know who I missed?
They were there at the end to go, boom, boom, go to the end of the train. But, like, take them out and tell me
what – Oh, those two guys?
I mean, they kind of, like
– I think you're adding the buddy to this team.
Yeah, exactly. You have to set up for the stakes.
I don't think Henry Zerny's going to join, but I do think the other guy, they've definitely put that in front of us, that guy might join.
Well, I do like the questions he brings up, because those are the questions as the audience.
It's all about family.
Right. Oh, God. Oh, well, you know,
see,
at the end.
AI. It's all family.
At the end, though, with the save of the train, I'm like, I turned to Katie and go family, and she started cracking up because she turned. But anyway, I like that guy and everything he shows up, and he's great. But I just, it was this detour they kept doing. I was like, oh, come on.
I love Shea Wiggins for Boardwalk Empire and all that stuff. Has one of the driest senses of humors. Yeah. Like, he's great. I think he's in the new Perry Mason, which is, if you haven't seen, cannot recommend that enough.
He's a great character actor, though. He's one of those guys, when they show up in a movie, you know it's going to be elevated.
Yes.
Like, he's one of those guys. So anyway, I just thought that was a little detour, but you're right. They're setting up that character who's also the audience surrogate. He's questioning. He's like, maybe Ethan's always right to go rogue.
Yeah.
Like, because he had, like, we know he always goes rogue because he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I will say, you know who I miss a lot? Simon Pegg. Like, in general.
Yeah.
Like, I think, man, I was like, when he showed up and he's doing his thing, I was like, ah, dang it. Yeah, like, where are you? What have you been doing?
Yeah.
He's come back.
Living off his Mission Impossible money.
He could do whatever he wants.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's probably making a couple million dollars
for
to be in these movies
because
the budgets are so high.
Yeah.
And so that for him, That's more than he's like, yeah, I'm good.
And
yeah.
He and Ving Rhames are filming a lot of this in a room together.
Yeah.
They're with the other. No, they didn't have to travel as much. There's a couple scenes with him and Ethan, but otherwise it's like, these guys are in a room doing computery stuff. And, you know, it's a nice payday.
Yeah. Ethan goes after Rebecca Ferguson in this pretty dope, like, desert shootout sequence. And he, you know, the two of them end up picking everybody off. And they have to elude that, like, you have to die. Like, this first, he's like, you've got to disappear and, you know, just go to ground. So she does. And
that was
then,
cute of them to try to trick us that they killed Rebecca Ferguson
twice.
In the first 10 minutes of the movie, where it's like, yeah, no. She's.
But, I mean, it's possible, right? Like, in these movies, it's not outside of the realm of possibility. That
I know,
you're
like,
lose.
Killing off Emilio in the beginning and stuff. But I'm just saying, like, you know, they didn't kill off Rebecca Ferguson. Yeah. I didn't watch the trailer, so people probably really knew. But
I forgot about the Emilio thing until you just said that. I was like, oh,
really?
They do kill him, like,
because
real early.
Because I was watching that movie at the same time as Mighty Ducks, and I'm like, Gordon Bombay!
Crazy that you bring that up. I just watched this. Have you ever seen Free Jack?
I haven't seen that one, no.
Also starring, Emilio Estevez and the bad guy from this movie.
Oh.
Like, they're both weird. In it. It's so, oh, cool. It's very weird.
Oh. You ever see, was it Men at Work? Is that the other one?
Yeah, that's great. I love
I miss Emilio.
Yeah.
I know he directed something. He just used to, growing up, Emilio was in so many movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't miss him.
That's good. Men at Work is so good.
They should, he's not really dead. He didn't die. Then we're getting into that is the problem with Fast and Furious. Take that back. I didn't really mean it. Because that's the problem. There's no stakes, right? And to your point, it's like people do die in this series. And so maybe Rebecca Ferguson is dead. I like to think that sometimes parts of the team die, because otherwise you feel like Fast and Furious and you're like, it's cheap. Because I was listening to How Did This Get Made, and they did Fast X. I'm like, I gotta hear
they've
what
done
they
them all.
And they were joking the way that me and Joe were. I don't know if we did on the show, but like, if you think that any of those people are dead and you didn't, they're like, I need you to like cut their head off and roll down into an incinerator. Like, none of them are dead unless you see them implode or
no,
you know,
or they die in real life. Here's how low the stakes are in Fast and Furious. One of those motherfuckers is actually dead, and they're still going to put him in a movie.
Yes,
they're still
going to
put
thing.
Him in a movie.
They joke about that in How to Get This Made. They're like, no, if you die, you become immortal in the in the series.
They keep bringing it back. Yeah. So they
fake her death.
Ethan gets the key. We go back and we see the
Kittredge
and Cary Elwes. I was like, hey, man, good to see you, too.
He's like the head of, not the CIA, but some kind of
I thought it was.
Secret.
I
think he is the CIA.
Is it CIA?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. Yeah. And they're basically like, they tell us what the entity is and what it's capable of doing.
Kind of, right?
Sort
like,
of.
No one really, like, there's, I think Cary Elwes is like, he's really the only other person besides Gabriel who's the bad guy of the movie.
It's weird to see him speak with an American accent.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've seen, you know, I watched
Saw.
I saw a bunch, so he hasn't.
I've seen none of the Saw, except for the whatever one we did with Chris Rock.
I recommend 1 and 2.
I've never seen them.
That's as far as I can get you.
But he's really the only one that knows. Everyone else is kind of...
He's kind of hinting around what it is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Tom Cruise infiltrates, and he says, I've got this. And he then gives him another mission where he's like, you got to go get the second half, and then...
I didn't know that everyone in IMF was... criminals that were either going to be
this is
the first time I've ever, Pete, have you heard that before? Did they just do this in this movie? Because that was a surprise to me.
You know, I think I've seen all but maybe Ghost Nation.
Okay,
but I don't remember much of the plots. I take these movies individually for what they
are. That's probably the
best
way
to Dirty Dozen. Like, this is Suicide Squad. I never ever knew IMF was criminals that either were going to go to jail for life, be killed, or they can, like, I don't know. That just to me seems like a...
I mean, I always took it as like they saw something in each person and just kind of plucked them out. And But
I thought they just were really good agents that got promoted to super secret.
Super secret agent.
I didn't know they
were. But no, I did not. I don't think I've ever known that they were all criminals.
Okay, I think that's a new information, which I don't know. I thought felt kind of weird because I'm like, I'm not saying, I mean, whatever, but... Suicide Squad
and
Dirty Dozen.
The game.
Yeah, and it's like, we're already like, concept, these people are great. And it's like, now they're like, oh, these are criminals that had no choice but to be indentured to the government. Like,
or you're
like,
going to jail for the rest of your life.
Oh, I'm like, this is kind of crap.
I mean, didn't they kind of introduce that with like 007 when Daniel Craig has this orphan with a tough background sort of past? They plucked him up. He wasn't necessarily
I feel like with James Bond, they were like, we can take this ball of potential and mold him into this secret agent that we want.
That scene when he comes out of the water.
I gotta tell you, you've heard that story, right? Where he got jacked to the gills for that, and then when he went to go do the girl with the dragon tattoo, Fincher's like, "Hey, can you drop like 30 pounds?" And he was like, "I just got into the best shape of my life, and you want me to do what?" And he
put on three sweaters.
He gave him Christian Bale's phone number and said, "Go back to him." Yeah.
Yeah. Daniel Craig's like, "Let me talk to you about forced perspective."
Yeah.
How many sweaters can you put on in this movie? In the words of Paul Rust and Matt Gourley, that's a cozy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ethan basically says to Kittredge, he says, "I'm going to find these keys and I'm going to destroy it. Like, this needs to be in the hands of no one. Whatever this entity is bad news." And, you know, again, we've seen that in other movies.
And luckily, if I destroy technology, no one will ever think of it again.
I have a question about that on that topic. So is that the reason why Shea Whigham's after him? Is because he made his intentions about this entity clear? Like, is he already being hunted because he was rogue from the last time?
The entity predicts everything, right? So I think when they say it later in the movie,
Shade Wiggum's sent from the CIA, like, right? He's on an official mission to catch Hunt.
Well, I think there's two different. I think there's two different things going on. The IMF or CIA or whatever is trying to track him down because he's gone rogue, right? Like, they have to have some control over these agents, which, you know, history.
It's
pretty hard. But
is
then
he going
also,
rogue from this movie's plot or the last movie's plot? Is it carryover from the last one?
No, I think every movie gets a reboot. That's what I'm saying. He's always on the run. I feel like it's always, maybe I'm misremembering, but I feel like they kind of clear it up and then they give him another mission if he chooses to accept.
Yeah,
and
it's Dirty Harry, you know, or any cop drama from the 70s and 80s. It's like, you're off the case. Give me your gun and badge.
Yeah,
and then we need you back, Cobra. Get out there. You're the best.
They always do. Exactly. So my impression was that he's good again, like as good as these agents
are. I think he's into the fold.
He's in the good graces.
Because every time he does go rogue, it's just like...
he did it for a good reason.
Right, but like to the Dirty Harry thing, it's like, yeah, he went rogue... But he did get the serial killer, so...
he did kill the Scorpio killer.
I guess you're all right. He did kill those three rogue
cops. Also, like, the idea of him going rogue is kind of dumb because the job is to go rogue, right? Like,
double rogue, though.
Do stuff, and then if you fail at it, we're going to say that we never knew you. So, like, you're always rogue, basically.
But if you... You're going the organization. You're going rogue from the official government. But if you go rogue from the rogue people, then you're just
now you're back in line.
See, right? And they need a rogue person.
You come back around.
So
there's rogue, not a casual rogue.
He gets his team. He gets Luther. He gets Benji. They are trying to track down. Well, the thing is, they want the key to kind of fall into the wrong hands because they have no idea where the entity is. And then they're like, well, we have no idea what it does. So we have to track this down to the very last step before someone uses the thing.
Right.
But to get some information.
Shea Whigham's is like, they go to this airport is really what it comes down to. They know that there's going to be a buyer for this key. And tech has always kind of been in these movies one or two, maybe up to four generations ahead, right? So, but now we've got these, Tom Cruise has these aviators that are basically Google.
They're AR glasses.
Yeah, they've got Google Glass or whatever.
That's a very outdated reference,
that's as far as I can get to.
That was discontinued 6 years ago.
Great.
They're AR glasses, though. Yes.
He looks so much like Grandpa with aviators on when he was trying to hit on her, and he's got this like big puffy cheeks and he's got the huge aviators. And
the
I'm
giant
like,
aviators.
Why do you look, he looks like your parents trying to dress cool.
Well, it's not quite to this level, but eventually he's going to get to the Clint Eastwood line where it's just like, stop trying to make yourself the romantic, like the sex object, like in that terrible movie where he's 50 years older and he's hitting on the...
And here's the thing. He has cast three of probably the most beautiful women in the world right now. Rebecca Ferguson, Haley Atwell, and the gal who is like
Clementoff?
No, the other one.
Oh, Vanessa Kirby?
Vanessa Kirby.
Pom Clementoff is
I gotta tell you, she's great on this.
I thought she's excellent.
She's super fun.
She's a Bond villain.
She is.
That doesn't speak.
She's a Bond henchman. Know?
That's what I mean. Like you're right.
Yeah.
And she's a Bond henchman.
Yes.
And that's what I kept thinking and how good she was.
Kind of worries me that that's what these are starting to turn into.
Well, okay. Here's the great chicken the egg question for you. I'm watching this movie after I've seen Fast X, and we talked Fast X has become Mission Impossible.
Yes.
And Mission Impossible has become James Bond. All these genres are starting to blur, and it's very strange the way that none of these movies feel like what they originally were. Because yeah. Fast and Furious was a heist movie. It was Point Break.
Right.
And then it became Mission Impossible. And so I just, the lines are blurring in a very
Kevin,
strange way.
It's not confusing. It's the singularity.
Yeah.
It's the entity.
Yeah. So they go to the airport.
Really fun scene.
It's a great scene.
Haley Atwell's there. Fantastic. Being a pickpocket. Yes. We find out later, you know, because we got it. She was hired by Vanessa Kirby's character yes. to get the key. She doesn't know why, though. But
Vanessa Kirby from... like two movies ago.
Yeah, the one when they're at the club or whatever.
Whichever one Henry yeah. Cavill reloads his arms.
It's the last movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's the last one.
Yeah.
So she's back, but she's hired her, unbeknownst to her, but she's hired her to get the key. Tom Cruise is trying to get the key, needs the buyer to have the key, but
to trace it back.
So they can trace it. But if she's pickpocketing the key, the buyer's not going to go through and get it to where right. the entity is and all that stuff. So it's a really fun sequence. Benji and Luther are in the crow's nest or whatever in the tower. But then Benji finds out there's a suspicious package and there's a bomb supposedly right. in the airport. So he gets to track that down. There's a really fun sequence where Luther is trying to talking to Benji, and they don't want Ethan to get thrown off because his stuff's important, but there's also a bomb. And I thought it was really cool the way they
like
went.
When we get to the main, like the bomb is going to explode. Yeah. Tom Cruise is like, and you didn't
like,
think
why didn't you tell me this?
He's like, I didn't want to worry. He's it's also, a nuclear bomb. No, worry me with that.
I mean, maybe Ethan Hunt can do anything, but still, like, he's on a mission. He has to get that key back. Right. And so, like, what is he going to do? Go defuse this bomb. Like, there's so much going on.
He would have put it in a refrigerator.
That's all you need. So I like that. This was like a Da Vinci Code thing he's trying to solve. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, that whole sequence right there leans into real-world AI invading our lives and absorbing parts of us. Yeah. Because how many of those Facebook quizzes are our parents taking?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
You know, hey, what's the name of your pet growing up? And what's the name of the street you grew up on? It's like people are feeding that into the dark web to get password breaking tools.
Right.
Yeah. They're like that's how you people are now... What's the phrase? Identity theft, you know, breaking sure. into yeah. Your yeah. life and taking
but
over your life.
But it's very important that's for me to know that's what the, which Muppet I am.
I was just going to say, I want to know which Sex and the City girl I am.
What color nail polish are you in regards to your Disney princess yeah. character?
You're Miranda, I'm Fozzie.
There you go.
We all yeah.
the entity is stealing Benji's information as he's shouting those words into it, yes. which comes back later in the movie as yeah. he's... taking his voice and turned it into a deep fake,
right.
essentially.
And so what I hear, I didn't get a chance to look it up, but Blake was telling me he read about it, and McQuarrie apparently kind of makes these up as he goes, and they film a ton
Can
of stuff.
Can you imagine the trust a studio
For
has to have?
I know. Yeah. If they didn't make so much money and weren't so good, that's when they would stop doing yeah. that. But they go, that's it's just like any other auteur where they're just like, they get to do it because
right.
they get results, right?
Right.
But apparently he kind of is figuring out as he goes, and they film a ton of footage, and they kind of put it together in editing because the actors actually don't get they don't know their motivations and don't get their lines
interesting
until they're about to do it because he's figuring it out, which I think is kind of crazy. And I feel like maybe this would be a little tighter if you know he did, but I don't know. I guess it works.
It works.
So anyway,
they haven't screwed up yet.
That's why I think it's so modern, though, because I think AI and the AI threat has been evolving over the past couple of years. And so I think as they're filming it, that started maybe incorporating itself more into the plotline.
Sure, sure, sure.
Theory. I don't know.
Just all the deep fakes and the you would think that with the masks, there would be like another level of like deep fake. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like especially
like you invented deep fake.
Right.
Yeah, right, yeah. right. So yeah, so there's a massive chase inside the airport that is really well done.
Another good comedy. So they all go their separate ways, and they're pulling off they're trying to pull people's faces off, and then Tom Cruise goes up and does his run on the top, and his face is like, I guess we lost him, and he's
Shea
in the
Wiggins,
background running.
Like, that also feels like it's out of a completely different movie.
It's funny.
It's not a bad thing, but it is a scene that's like, you know, it's shot from like above, so we're looking up at Shea Wiggins and the other guy. And you can just see Tom Cruise sprinting across the top of the airport. That's also a scene I can only imagine, like, when they're filming it, right? where
Tom,
it's,
go now. Like, it's just like to cue him to
action,
run.
And then Tom Cruise is just running. Yeah. And he's not running for, you know, 20 feet.
I mean, it's a long
that
run.
That dude is running, like, for a minute.
Yeah. If you go to Alamo, they played this really funny video of all these different clips of things Ethan Hunt's done, and they time it to music, and it's really good. But there's this one portion of it where it's him running, and you see all the scenes with him just doing his crazy upright run. And anyway, it's
very funny.
But they go their separate ways. But Hayley Atwell gets away. Rome.
Yeah, she gets
away. She goes to Rome to shoot Fast and Furious.
Correct. Yes. You know, man, Fast X would be like, we got Hayley Atwell. Yeah, where she gets caught by the Italian police, and she's, you know, they have all these passports and all of these different crimes, and she like goes into her act, which is like, I'm just a teacher on sabbatical.
I like this con man stuff she does. Let me see that passport. Rubs her finger over it, changes the picture.
Also, but no, she takes the paperclip. That's what she's doing.
I thought she changed the picture.
No, she just
wipes the paperclip.
I thought it was more clever. Which I thought she had some kind of heat active.
It
okay.
drives me insane. This is my job, right? Why were the keyholes down? Like, what idiot cop put the keyholes
where they can
facing,
always pick their...
Yeah, you never do that. They always face up. That's,
well,
it's like,
different
come
country.
On.
The toilet flushes the different way. The cuffs go upside
it's
down.
The it's the same thing as, like, I was watching... I'm doing a guest spot on Binge Movies, and I'm watching these movies from the 90s, and I'm watching them all, like, pull a pistol from the holster and then rack it. It's like, you just wasted a round. Like, why would you be running around?
Or
what are you doing?
When they've just fired the gun and they put it in the front of their pants.
Oh, God.
And you're like, do you
have any idea how hot that is?
Oh, well, it depends what you're into.
I mean, I guess Joe, fair. If that's your thing.
Yeah.
I don't judge. Again, no kink shaming on real spoilers.
So the great airport.
Except for yours. We will shame your kinks, whatever they are.
So she's in Rome.
Yeah.
Ethan Hunt poses as her lawyer, gets her out, but also, like, she's constantly evading him. So, like,
she's like,
he's trying to help her.
Right.
And
but she doesn't know that she can trust this dude.
Also true. She's totally. A pickpocket.
But
she's an orphan pickpocket.
She's also in way over her head. And
I don't think she knows how in over her head she is. Biden here.
But it makes total sense. She's just like, I just need to get away from all of this.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah, right. Here, you take this. I'm out. Yeah.
But he's constantly trying to get back to her because, you know, he needs her for the key that she keeps swiping from him. But also, like, she's in immense danger. So this leads into a great car scene.
Fantastic.
Another very funny thing. Like,
really great car chasing.
Yeah, we've got the dead drop or whatever for the car, and you think it's some Lambo or whatever that thing is. And it's a tiny little
car. It's supposed to be an Aston Martin, and it turns out to be a Fiat 500.
That goes back to my whole
James Bond. That's a good.
Yes. That Fiat actually is a. So, I'm a big car guy, and car chase scenes can very, very quickly piss me off. This was wonderful because you're led to believe that the Fiat 500, they don't say it one time, is electric conversion. Mm-hmm. So it has a direct drive motor right on the axle. So it's basically actually able to peel out and drift and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And if you don't know how to drive a car like that, it can be very scary. And and you get the eternal burnout that she's doing when she's driving. That's
smart.
That's pretty realistic.
Because, electric cars, they don't have, like, the engine doesn't have to take
I have an electric car. Yeah. And, like, there's no, it was weird the first time I drove it. Like, I put my head almost through the headrest because there is absolutely no delay between, I'm going to say gas, even though there's no gas. When you hit the gas pedal and that car starts on a regular car, right?
You got a little ramp up.
It grabs the gas. It does the combustion. It moves the piston. There's like a little bit of a delay. You hit the pedal on a gas.
Accelerator.
You hit the accelerator on an electric car and you are
off like a
rocket.
Yeah.
Like, it's
and that car
crazy.
That you're driving to is programmed to give you a little bit of a throttle, a little bit of a ramp up to that level. If you're building like a competition electric vehicle, there's a certain series of races that the Porsche is very popular in. I can't remember what it is. It's not one I'm super into, but they experimented with a hybrid electric vehicle in there. And they had to ban it because it was just running the gamut. It was literally like destroying every single competition. So watching a non-professional driver like the pickpocket,
That was
spin
fun.
Around in circles as he's like, turn right, turn right.
It was hilarious too. And watching Pom so keep cutting back to Pom and her looking like, what is this?
Yeah.
And it kept going by, and like the editing's
kids,
really
Tower
good.
Tower of London, Big Ben.
Yeah. The editing's really good because the geography felt real.
Yeah.
Like,
because yeah.
You know, obviously Pom isn't in driving this huge vehicle around the city, but the way that they filmed her and her reactions to the direction that we're seeing him go by her and everything,
yeah.
It's really great. Well done.
No,
she looked like she was having a blast. That character looked like she was having super fun.
Yeah. I like
she's a maniac. And then also there's one of the funniest parts in the movie is very subtle. They flip over, they roll over, and at some point they end up on the opposite
side. Switch, yes.
Yeah, and they're on the correct side now. And the stakes also of, again, nerfing, there's a kind of a theme throughout the whole thing. So taking the power away from IMF or Ethan Hunt or whoever. It's like, if you can't use all these electronic doodads and you can't tap into everybody's phone, you have to go CRT. They rebuild the mission command center with all CRT
to go analog
TVs.
And stuff like
all analog. That was a cool trope. They have to smash their computers at some point because they're compromised because the entity's in there.
Yeah.
Ethan not even being on the train in the chain sequence, which we mentioned before. But in this one, him not being able to drive because his arms are crossed and he's handcuffed on the wrong side because he didn't think ahead. That was a really great way to nerf a very competent character who can do no wrong, who's you know he's going to come out on top. You're like, oh, shoot. What's he got now? Now he's driving with one arm.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Is taking his skills kind of out of the game and then letting Haley Atwell, letting all those other characters kind of pick up his
and
slack.
And that's why, without your theory, I call it fish out of water because, you know, all appearances show she's a con man. And maybe there's more to it, but they show her
even if she ends up being a spy, for our intents and purposes, the experience as a viewer is fish out of water.
I just think she looks the woman that we see killed in the flashbacks. I think just looks eerily similar.
But this flashback is supposed to be like 30 years ago.
I know
she'd be like 10.
I guess that's true.
Like the
is
timeline
that not from an actual Mission Impossible movie earlier?
No,
in the franchise?
I don't think so.
Because the villain isn't in those movies.
No,
this is totally retconned.
That's good to know because the whole time I was thinking, oh, maybe I should have gone back and watched all these movies. I don't remember that.
This
scene
looks very similar to the scene in the first movie where the woman gets killed by the gate and the guy they're chasing gets killed too. They film it in that same kind of but it's not the same.
No.
So
they our characters Haley Atwell takes off as she handcuffs Tom Cruise to the car.
The train's coming.
It does, you know, obviously we know he's gonna get away, but it does look like he may not get away.
It's close.
And now we're back to square one with all of these people.
Tom Cruise crashed 2,000 cars on train tracks
to get that scene. Yeah, right. We see Tom, you know, he kind of walks out and we see Simon
he's
Pegg
holding the steering wheel.
And Ving. Has a seat.
Another funny him holding it down
by
his side.
Yeah, trying to like keep it hidden.
Yeah.
We see that Simon Pegg pulls up with Ving Rhames, and then, of course, we see Rebecca Ferguson sitting in the car as well. So now we've got our core team is back together. And then
how they kind of just look at each other like, oh.
Well, I think she says, she's like, you told me to go to ground and I can't leave you.
Right.
And I do like that, like, this relationship, I would call it more of a situationship, I think, where it's like they're definitely into each other. You know, like there are scenes, you know, when we see them in Venice and she kind of like cuddles up to him. And it's like,
that was sweet.
I think so, too. I think
they went on a gondola ride.
Yeah, right.
Like, wow, this is nice.
It does give Ethan Hunt, I think of it as Superman, right? Like, Superman needs the human relationships to make him human.
Right.
And to feel
and
human.
And to
Tom Cruise should try that.
Maybe. Yeah. He has.
He tried.
And has failed miserably twice. So they figure out that this buyer is going to be at this gala. They end up bringing Haley Atwell back into the fold. And we find that Gabriel reveals himself to, and we find out, you know, that this is the guy that set Tom Cruise kind of, or Ethan Hunt, on this Mission Impossible mission. Yeah. World.
And this is Asai Morales is the
actor. Another great, like, character actor. You if you see him, you're like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
He's playing this very shadowy figure that you can't quite tell what's going on, and come to find out he's working with the entity. Tom Cruise in his AR glasses sees a flash of him.
Right.
They see footage of the airport and they're like, he's erasing himself in real time.
The only time they see him is in a reflection.
Yeah.
Which is a good little plot thing.
I do like
that.
You know,
nice.
Where it's like, we
he's
can't
like
see him on camera.
Vampire.
Yeah, that's right.
And come to find out, like, if, you know, in that flashback he has from that first mission, that's who Gabriel is. He's one of the guys
that's not a mission. It's the heist.
Well, yeah, whatever got him. Yeah, whatever got him in trouble that got him into IMF.
Right.
That he was there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the catalyst for Ethan Hunt's current.
He's his life. Joker.
He kind of.
You know, he's kind of the.
He's his.
He started.
He's his Blofeld.
Yeah. Right.
That's exactly who this guy is.
Yeah.
In that scene in the nightclub when he's talking about one of you has to die, you choose which one. I like the stakes there. I like it was you know that Ethan's going to get out of it very quickly, but I like the stakes of it. And I also really liked it was being played like a fiddle, but I let it happen when he's like, this key will be presented to me and laid down at my feet on this train tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. He sets out the whole thing. And when it happens, when it flash forward to that actually happening in the theater, I'm like, oh man, it happened. Yeah. He kneeled down and got it.
Yeah.
I was very excited about that, and I knew they were playing me plainly like a fiddle. But you kind of have to do that for this movie, because if you're a supervillain, like it's Itzai Morales or Gabriel is, and you are pairing up with this computer entity, at what point do you have to let go of your own thought process and know that that machine will sacrifice you at any moment to get what it wants.
Yeah.
Like he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be its right-hand man. I'm going to be the leader of the free world or whatever. But it's like, it's a 50-50 chance that Hunt's going to kill him on the train. And Morales is just okay with that. His whole thought process and his whole pairing up and the weird kind of aloof nature of that villain, you kind of have to turn your brain off for it, because when he falls off the train onto that truck that's driving by.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can allow a lot of things, but if I'm going to allow that, I really have to accept that this is a Fast X world.
But do you think it's possible to allow that?
But this computer is supposed to be so good that he can.
I mean, he's looking at his watch. He's like,
yeah, because
that watch is hooked up to the
you know what
sure,
I mean?
Entity.
Yeah,
I get it. I mean, I'm on board with it. I accepted it, and I really enjoyed the movie because of it. But it's almost like the entire premise of the movie. It's Mission Impossible. There's 7 movies now, and like we said at the very beginning, surprise, they're going to win at the end.
Yeah.
It's an impossible mission
I grant
that they've
you that
done.
It's a ludicrous concept, but...
No, sure. That's Fast X.
But but the concept itself within that world, it's living by its own rules. Like,
I agree.
When he falls into that truck, I'm like, no, they knew that there'd be a delivery, and
entity's telling him. Like, he sets it because the entity's in control, and I like the idea, and if you watch Westworld, that's the same thing they're setting up, where this thing is so freaking good. I don't want to spoil Westworld, but they're gathering a lot of data, and the reason they're doing it is to be able to predict things, world-changing things, be in control of things, and so it's that good that it has ran all the computations, and I like the idea that this villain... He isn't a villain that's scary because I've got all these henchmen or even I've got this big bomb. No, he can predict the future, but it's in a tech way. It's not a magic way. It's
by getting all of your information. You're like, look, you're going to, about Haley Atwell or Rebecca Ferguson.
He's telling
you're going
them.
To put, you're going to choose one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One
and
of
then,
them.
And he can be like, oh, I was hoping it was you.
Here's how I look at the truck scene. How many times have you seen an actor do that in a movie? And there wasn't an explanation, right? Like, it's like your actor falls off of a bridge, and it just happens to be
the right thing. Then you're like, oh, come on.
Least here, even though the answer is admittedly ridiculous, like, at least they had an answer, where typically it's just like, surprise, we didn't kill the star of the movie.
There was a
pickup truck carrying mattresses that just happened to be driving by.
But it is in world two, though, because, Pete, you got to admit, though, they flipped over and over and over in a tiny Fiat and landed and didn't have a scrape on them.
Okay, like, so this is the only thing I'll say.
That shot where they flip that and they stay and the camera stays in the car.
Great shot. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Like, that was some
next level stuff. I think of that as, yes, they should probably have something, but I think of that as that's like the secret agent car. Right,
I know.
There is probably a little bit more.
It's got
like
reinforced roll bars,
and all of that.
But
stuff.
But you have to have some kind of suspension because
when they are flipping over each other,
they're moving. I mean,
they should have at least broken windows and a dented roof.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
So there's
it's one of the smallest, lightest cars on the planet. So it's going to have less damage than say a Hummer rolling over.
Right.
Sure.
But I agree. There's like, I don't know, the entire concept of the movie. to me, the second you realize you're going into a Mission Impossible movie and they wink at the camera and go, it's called the Impossible Mission Force.
Yeah.
That's the name. That's what IMF stands for. I don't know if they said that earlier in the series either. But
they don't.
No, this is the first time.
Yeah. Okay, great. Wonderful. Because I was experiencing it for the first time and I'm thinking that's wonderful because it elevates the camp and cheese level of it. But it's like the best version. It's almost going back to the original TV series, right?
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
And that's kind of the problem that they have, right, is that it's based on a show 60s. That's 60 from like 60 something years old at this point. Yeah. And so like what we thought was cool, we're a lot more savvy as viewers now. And the same way that when we talk about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade and we're like, "Oh my God, that fan service that was so fun." Now we watch and we're just like, "Oh my God, you are not spoon feeding; you are force feeding into it."
Right.
So let's get to the train.
Yes. So we get to the gala. We see all the bad guys. Everything's laid out.
We find out Vanessa Kirby is going to sell the key to Gabriel in the
entity. And I do like that in that scene. Ethan Hunt's like, "Hey, how about no?" And she's like, "I gotta look out for number one."
Yeah. Because she's like, "It's predicted. Like, if I don't do this, I'm gonna die."
This is the scene where on this little bridge to the entity kind of starts deep faking Simon Pegg's voice, leading Ethan Hunt away, like further and further away.
Right, so it gives Gabriel and Pom, who plays Paris, good fight. That tight alley sequence.
You know, I hate that up close
stuff. Shaky cam for my
I feel the same. Yeah, but in given their
to film environment in that tight of a spot
is pretty. And was, Ethan Hunt ends up.
And he followed it. It wasn't just like a blur in front of the camera. Like they actually could.
He was doing. Yeah, and good. Then we leave. He has Pom.
Haley Atwell fights
Paris.
Him.
Well, we should Paris, I guess, is Pom's name.
Haley Atwell fights him, kind of loses, doesn't die, but loses. And then Rebecca Ferguson comes out with the sword that someone had earlier.
Oh, that was cool.
Pom had it earlier.
Paris
had it
but ever. We should say that during this fight sequence between Paris and Ethan, Ethan has her dead to rights and lets her live, which will come back later. Mm-hmm. So, we got Haley Atwell versus Gabriel and...
knife fight.
Kind of loses, but like... Gabriel turns around and there's Rebecca Ferguson. They have their fight and it's great. They're both, tagking each other. And what looks like Rebecca Ferguson gets stabbed in the chest. Mm. And, Ethan Hunt arrives too late and everybody's gone at that point.
I think she's dead, but we'll see. I wouldn't be beyond this series.
I don't think so.
I do, but it wouldn't be beyond
belief. I think the only reason I'm saying as to what Tom said is they say earlier
when they say choose one, one of them has to die, and so they're trying to disrupt
the
entity's predictions by making the entity think it got because
Gabriel's the one that stabbed. Like, how could Gabriel?
Oh, I'm not saying that she didn't get hurt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm saying she didn't actually die.
I just think it kind of undermines, unless it's just to trick the audience, but Ethan Hunt seems pretty depressed over
but
it.
Again,
but he didn't kill Gabriel on the train top.
Yes,
and he's at a point where the entity can still presumably see him.
Okay,
so like if he's not grieving over her, visibly, publicly, then the entity will know she didn't die. I think she got hurt. Like, and part of me almost wonders if they sent her there to take a dive.
That's exactly what I think. You go there
and let yourself get injured, so we can let you look dead to the entity.
Right.
To serve a higher plot point.
The greater good, if you will.
Yeah, I could see it. It's if it's a and really
if that
good
wasn't the plan and Christopher McQuarrie's listening.
Yeah, if you're still writing.
I would like
Are we still writing?
Credit.
Hopefully he's not writing. He's not supposed to be writing.
Well, true. Good point.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did I just violate the strike?
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
I thought you were an ally, dude.
Yeah. I try. I just mine's always working.
Just on that point real quick, you're going to tell me all those writers aren't writing right now? Like, I don't think they just turn it in. That's true. But I guarantee you they are cranking stuff.
Know. Well, if they're on the picket line,
I think if it's like a passion project, if it's their own screenplay that they've been working on, I see them tinkering with it.
I don't see somebody writing a Batman movie.
If it's the next season of,
Curb.
They're not working.
Probably not.
Because they're not getting paid, so they're certainly not working without getting
paid. I just think as people
plus,
who
plus, a lot of those things are... It's a writer's room.
That's true.
Like, it's a group of people writing it. So it's like you can't really necessarily write the next episode of a TV show by yourself, because it's not the structure.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So, yeah, so this is where they bring Haley Atwell into the team. They're like, look, you're the, if you would have just stopped running from the get-go, none of this would have happened.
Katie was so mad at this character, and I was getting frustrated, although I wasn't getting as mad, but like, it's like, yes, it's your fault. And especially when she apologizes, like, I'm sorry, this is my fault. You know, Katie's over there, yes, yeah, it is.
It's Rose Byrne from last week. It's like, if you would have just helped him to win that. So they bring her in. They're like, look, you're going to have to be this person. You're going to have to put this mask on. You're going to act like her. I did like
you're
the little...
You're an IMF-er.
You're an IMF-er. Yeah. I did like... I don't think I've ever noticed the little...
The voice changer.
The voice thing on her throat.
I think they do it sometimes.
Which it's I thought was cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Because so, that's the explanation, because it's not supposed to be like magic. You know, it's like, how do they get their voices to sound
different? So
they don't address the eyes, though, I don't think.
Okay,
well,
I'm glad
that
you brought
that
up.
They didn't change her eye color. Yeah,
but like,
it, but
are
it
you
never
telling
came up that,
that even the guy,
didn't,
like her own bodyguard, was like,
entire
hey.
Day with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never I never noticed what color.
Vanessa
his eyes.
Kirby
Vanessa Kirby
has bright blue
has
eyes.
Like piercing
if you say
blue
so,
eyes.
I did not notice.
They are.
I never noticed eyes.
Okay, but they are distracting. Like, if you pay attention to that stuff, they are distracting. And I turned to Katie, I'm like, but she has brown eyes. And I thought that was going to be a plot point. Maybe it was. And Macquarie's like, eh, never mind. Like, maybe, you know, but it's so obvious. It's such an obvious
her Vanessa Kirby, thing. Like, when you see her for the first time, I was like, yeah.
It's also a good visual cue for the audience to know which
that
one
is
you're
true.
Dealing
it
with.
It might
that's
be
true.
For the audience. Yeah. But you're expecting the guy to
notice it.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. Kittredge is there doing...
Well, we should say that like Ethan's supposed to be on this train with her as her bodyguard, but I take it as the entity broke their machine.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And like they couldn't get the second mask printed
in
time.
It caught wind and stopped.
Why does that machine have internet access is my question.
That's well, they got to download the
why
pictures.
Why does my smart fridge have internet access?
No, you're right, but...
So yeah, this
has been broke that my freezer to the Wi-Fi.
Do you really?
It does. I've never
what
done
it. What
does
it do?
Like I could like as I was driving home like, "Oh, let's preheat the oven."
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's all right.
Yeah. I've never done it, but it just
good luck when AI takes over.
Yeah,
your house can be very warm.
Yeah. I'll be safe. It's coming for you guys. I'm already on team AI.
Oh, okay. So great.
This is the giant
it's great
train.
Thing. It's
fantastic.
This is great. Like my only complaint about this movie is that like I feel like the other movies had more action scenes that were like, holy crap, what are they doing? This really kind of had one, which is this train scene at the end.
But when
like,
you see what goes into him planning to do the jump and everything, I just, it's very...
I get it. Yeah. I get it. But I will say, they, at least they saved it to the end. They go out with a bang. Yeah. Like this scene, and this scene, quote unquote, has two major crazy stunts taking place. The motorcycle part and then the actual trains hanging off the side of the bridge.
It's really cool, but it's straight out of Uncharted 2.
I thought the same thing.
Way better.
No, you haven't seen it. The game's incredible.
Yeah, I think it's a movie. I've never seen it.
I'm going to tweet about this later. Don't you steal it. No, Mission Impossible made a better Uncharted movie than Uncharted
did.
That movie sucks.
I don't think the movie, it's not, it doesn't suck.
But the game is
incredible. This is the game.
Yeah,
like this feels like the scene from the game.
When they blow up that bridge and the train's hanging up, like I mean, I was grinning ear to ear.
Yeah,
I was like, this is so cool.
Incredible. When Gabriel triggers the bombs, and I was like, huh, how's that gonna?
Yeah,
we're gonna Back to the Future to it,
and it looked so real.
It looked fake.
Like they crashed that train.
Fake?
No,
they
didn't. Yes, they did.
They crashed
that train.
When they're going in the cart and it's like Inception with the way things are turning around and they're floating and
it
like,
looked incredible.
I'm like, this is amazing.
That part's not real, but they filmed. That's why you have the camera angles and stuff.
Yeah.
He crashed a train, like a decommissioned train off of a bridge.
Nolan's awesome. Like, oh yeah? Well, I'm going to detonate this nuclear bomb.
Yeah,
now what?
I'm actually going to destroy
a
third world nation.
Rises. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a runaway train. He kills the conductor, puts it full
speed
ahead.
Never coming back.
No,
I love that song.
And from there, it's just a huge fight chase.
It's
sequence.
A massive set piece.
Uncharted 2 at the end.
Yes.
The bridge blows. They have to. What's his Shea Whigham and friend have to chase everyone?
And that's what I'm saying is like he has moments where you're like he's kind of a. But then he sees Kittredge, and then we find out that like what the main thing is. The U.S. government planned this whole thing, right? It didn't plan on it going this far, but Carrie Ewells sets this whole thing into motion.
And accidentally commit an act of war.
Correct. Yeah. So Gabriel kills Carrie Ewells. Kittredge is there, and
we find out Vanessa Kirby's really going to sell it to Kittredge, which is a surprise. We thought she was going to choose Gabriel, but she's there to do the deal with Kittredge
to the government.
And the reason why she kills, or Gabriel kills Cary Elwes, is that he's the only one that knows the location of the sub on the planet, which is an interesting plot point for the audience, because usually if there's a really important bit of information, it's left a mystery to the audience, but we're given it in the first scene.
Which is why I was so confused, because it was so irregular.
It's a weird way of storytelling, because all the characters don't know, but we know, which is usually it's the opposite. The characters know, but we don't know.
I couldn't read it. I couldn't understand what, because like they gave us the mystery of the whole movie.
Right.
And then when they reveal it to the characters, they give you the
information in the very beginning. 2 hours later, I completely forgot.
Oh, really?
That it was. I was like, oh yeah, that's right.
Oh yeah, we were on the submarine.
That's right. Yeah. That was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, giant. You know, again, the key literally falls at Gabriel's feet. He picks it up. There's another little fight sequence between Ethan and Gabriel on the top of the train, which is right out of Part One. Like this is the whole
Part One. What?
Mission Impossible 1. Like there's the whole scene, he's wearing the same outfit. He's got the gloves, the black t-shirt. Like it's the same thing on top of this train.
This is the part I can't buy. Like give him some magnet boots or something.
Do they fight when they're going under the tunnel in the first one too? Because that was giving me anxiety. When they're laying on their stomachs.
The only reason I think that they do is because I think Tom Cruise like pushes.
He's hanging from the side of it, I know.
At one point, yes. But the whole point of that is he's going to go face first into a helicopter blade.
The whole time I was watching, I'm like, with those little signs going by, I'm like, if you get hit by that, your head's coming off.
No, it's not, because we know that it's not.
I don't play by Indiana Jones universe rules. That's the thing.
Yeah, so they...
I did like, you never see characters, okay, they're on their stomachs, and usually it's like, time out.
Yeah, exactly.
And this one,
that's what I was saying.
Gabriel's like, swipe, like, I'm coming at you with this knife, and it was very claustrophobic.
It was scary.
And, you know, Gabriel, like, he falls off the train into the truck, and he thinks he gets away. Turns out Tom Cruise pickpocketed him.
Yeah.
So now Tom Cruise has
the key.
Tom
Cruise pulled off 1,500 magic performances to train for this movie.
I do like that, you know, that Gabriel reaches into his pocket.
He's now starring in a Doug Henning biopic.
And he pulls out this lighter that has been a thing throughout the movie. And then he pulls like a Kirk from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Which is like, Ethan!
That was a little cheesy.
That was a little cheesy. Yeah.
Loved it.
And our heroes get away, and...
But now they have a new mission, which is they got to go get that sub.
And they've got Haley Atwell. Haley Atwell says, you know, goes to Kittredge and says, Ethan Hunt tells me you're a man I can trust. And it's just like, he's not.
Yeah.
He's definitely not.
And I think even he's like, interesting. He would say that about me, because remember in this first movie?
Right. I was the bad guy.
He's never been a man you can trust. He killed his whole team.
He says, I choose to accept. And she is now part of IMF. And yeah, we're off to find the submarine, which again, the way this ends, you could be like, okay, like we're not done, but this is the ending of a movie.
But I saw a whole movie and it's
good guys
like,
kind of won for temporary.
Yeah. But it's not like we've never seen a movie that sets up the next movie.
Yeah, right.
Like it's not a cliffhanger. Yeah.
Right.
I don't feel like
it's not. Yeah. It's this is the perfect way. I turned to Katie and I said, this is how you do a part one of something.
Yeah.
You saw a whole movie, great experience, great action, and you're left like, I wonder what will happen next.
Yeah. And that's where we are.
It was a lot of fun.
These
movies continue to amaze me, because on paper, I shouldn't like anything about them. They're just not my thing, typically, but they're so well done.
And they're fun.
They're fun.
Yeah,
they're fun.
Super fun.
And everybody.
Do you guys feel like you were dragging near the end? Did you feel long at all? Because
I felt long in the beginning. I think the beginning
same.
Is.
I felt more like that at the beginning, where I was like, let's get to the
spy stuff.
By the time they were doing the train, man, I was just like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
I'm all in. Yeah.
That first part, I think, is rough to ramp up. It was very exposition heavy, and I don't think they need to like.
The exposition was one of the worst parts of this movie, though, because they're literally all the different team members are taking turns explaining to the audience, aka each other, really the audience, all the little plot points that they have to do, which is you kind of have to do in a complex, you know, ins and outs secret agent sort of storyline.
Yeah.
But it felt
clunky.
It felt like they're looking right at the camera and telling the audience.
That's where
and so many times that they're like, well, the entity will do this. They explain that like five times. I mentioned on Twitter, Tom Cruise says okay a lot. He says, okay. He says, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? This okay? It's going to be okay. Everything's okay.
There was
because it was during COVID and he was checking in on everyone.
There was the line where he says, I'm always going to value your life over my own. And I was like,
that's like, yeah, like, I don't think you're wrong, but that's not comforting.
But also that is a, that goes into how I feel about Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Well, because also it's like life, how little he seems to value his own life. Correct. That, like, that's not super comforting.
But I also, yeah, it seems very sociopathic.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very sociopathic thing to say, where, yeah, he's just like, I care so much about you.
Right. It's love. Yeah. It's early in it's the relationship. He's love bombing.
He's love bombing. Yeah, right, so. Right.
But anyway, no, this was a lot of fun. I didn't think it was quite as good as the last two, but it was still a great time.
Yeah, yes. I think I liked it more than the last one, actually. I think I'm kind of in the minority there, but I didn't like the last one as much as 5 and 4, but they're all solid action movies.
These are all...
They're just freaking impressive that, again, with all the planning and all the practical work and the cameras, this is a movie where I want a couple hours of special features to dive into.
Yeah, for sure. Like, normally it's just like, a computer did it. Thanks.
Yeah,
like,
give me that one, Macquarie... It's like,
I watched the whole
track,
like, thing, the YouTube thing they had about how they did the motorcycle thing. Yes, like,
that's where you got the number from.
Yeah. But anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find
this. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21. Also on Letterboxd at the same.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And Pete, where can they find you?
Well, I think the best way to follow me would be just to subscribe to the podcast. It's called Middle Class Film Class. Released twice a week, and we're in the middle of a trivia tournament, which is not for the faint of heart. It's gonna be wrapping up in 2 weeks with the finale. It got a head-to-head, which I can't say here because the last episode hasn't aired yet. But yeah, follow us on any podcast app you want under Middle Class Film Class, and on Twitter for me is at The Real Pete with 4 E's in the middle. PEEEETE.
And that trivia thing is incredible. Like, he's playing down like how amazing, but he's done a great job with the production value, the sound effects, the questions are amazing. It's such a fun listen. So seriously, if you're like into trivia, movie buff type stuff, like, it's super fun to listen to.
You will not be disappointed. There's a lot of people going home in tears because it's like, what questions are these? Yeah. Why?
They're fun. You did a great job.
Awesome. Cool, and thanks. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and check out the YouTube. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Solo and Kuryakin burn the disc. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.